You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, May 1st, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. Has the week gone by that quickly? I feel like it was only yesterday that I was being admonished for wearing a t-shirt as opposed to a soft-collared shirt. It's Casual Friday. As such, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to review the week's news. And the man who always brings a smile to my face, Andy Kindler, just to bring a little sunshine into the overcast day here in Brooklyn. Also on the program today, just moments ago, Maryland's state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, announced that there would be criminal charges, homicide, manslaughter, and misconduct charges against the police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. Here is a clip of her announcement literally moments ago.
Once alerted about this incident on April 13th, investigators from my police integrity unit were deployed to investigate the circumstances surrounding Mr. Gray's apprehension. Over the course of our independent investigation in the untimely death of Mr. Gray, my team worked around the clock, 12 and 14 hour days, to canvass and interview dozens of witnesses, view numerous hours of video footage, repeatedly reviewed and listened to hours of police videotaped statements, surveyed the route, reviewed voluminous medical records, and we leveraged the information made available to us by the police department, the community, and the family of Mr. Gray. The findings of our comprehensive, thorough and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges.
So there you have it. What is also shocking about this is that the Washington Post had on its front page sort of this leaked supposed report about how he had done this himself. I mean, clearly, this is a huge embarrassment for the Washington Post.
He had done this himself, as in Freddie Gray broke his own spine.
Right.
That's what Sam's
talking about.
And like, as absurd as it sounds, the media actually ran with that.
Yes. So there's it's sort of a shocking failure on the part of the Washington Post. We got more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this with Cliff Schechter.
We'll be right back.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is, of course, Casual Friday, and you know what that means.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Cliff Schachter. Welcome, Cliff. Happy Friday.
You too, Sammy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little tired. It's been a tiring week for me. I'm not sure why, but quite a lot of news and turmoil this week.
Well, it's definitely been emotionally exhausting. There's no doubt about that.
Indeed.
There's just, you know, there's bad stuff going on out there, Sam.
There is, and I mean, let's talk about this. I mean, at the very least, it's encouraging to see some measure of accountability. I mean, cops rarely get prosecuted convicted, I should say, in situations like this. But to see at least a prosecutor do their due diligence and actually take ownership of this, right, as opposed to sort of punting to a grand jury. So that they don't, they've taken themselves out of the equation politically. You had Marilyn Mosby just moments ago say that we have probable cause to file criminal charges. And she said that, she said a couple of things about the cops. She referred repeatedly to the mistreatment of Freddie Gray. She also said that the cops had arrested him with no grounds. They violated police procedure by putting him in cuffs and leg cuffs in the van without seat belting him, and then repeatedly failed to get him medical attention. It was revealed yesterday that the Baltimore police were now admitting to two other stops that were not in the original timeline in the basically two-minute ride, or what should have been a two-minute ride, from where Freddie Gray was thrown into the van to when he got there. It took 40 minutes in total.
Right.
And apparently when he was pulled from the wagon at the police department, according to Mosby, he was no longer breathing at all.
Yeah. Obviously this is hugely important. I mean, we went through so much of Ferguson, New York, in Staten Island, a variety of places where it just seemed like there was no justice at all for any of this behavior. And so obviously just seeing a prosecutor who's willing to do their job and take this seriously, you know, because we saw with the grand jury system, I don't remember the numbers at the time, right? It was something like 3% of police were indicted and like 90% otherwise, or 97 or something. I mean, it was like almost the exact opposite. It was ridiculous. So that's really important. And I mean, it doesn't take away what's occurred, which has been tragic, but it gives us some hope that a prosecutor is either doing the right thing because she believes in doing the right thing, or at least the culture has changed enough that they feel like they have to do the right thing, which is hugely important. You know, we can hope to improve from that. I've found really some of the most, and I'm not shocked by this, insightful writing on this. I don't know if you read, Sam, what David Simon wrote.
Right.
Of The Wire. And, I mean, you know, all of his original TV shows, of course, came from being a city desk reporter. And this is what he did.
In Baltimore, he went around and saw
what the police did and saw how they acted. His whole write-up of, you know, what the code used to be versus what it is now. And his whole point was, look, it's not that I'm justifying the way it used to be, but it used to be that you know, there were specific behaviors that got you what was known as a rough ride, i.e. they kicked your ass, essentially, on the way there. And it was fighting back, you know, for the most part against the police. It was trying to hurt them. And again, he was saying he wasn't justified, but he was just pointing out that there was a code to these things. And from his look at what's happened here, this code that sort of, you know, unwritten code that conducted or, you know, taught police how to conduct their behavior has just gone out the window, where somebody looks at you the wrong way for a second And, you know, these are, they'll throw these people, you know, they'll throw these people in a car, in the car or somewhere else, and beat them up.
Well, you know, it's interesting that that interview he gave, he specifically, and, you know, it's been, you know, I think it's not a secret that he has had a problem with Martin O'Malley.
Since the time that,
O'Malley was the mayor of Baltimore. In fact, his character of Carchetti is based on O'Malley. But I mean, the thing that he basically says is that the reason why that code supposedly went away was because O'Malley as mayor was so interested in making it look like crime had been reduced that basically all of the restraints on police officers and the restraints that caused them to do good police work were basically thrown off. I mean, so
that's right. Well, they swept the streets. I mean, essentially the and this is, he's not the first one to discover this. I think a lot of this was done under Rudy Giuliani in New York too. You know, if for petty crimes, you took everybody off the street, or not even petty crimes, just for loitering. You know, he referred to these as humbles, which were sort of their excuses for arresting people. And essentially, but even those were thrown aside. If you could just go up and drive up to certain blocks, you know, where their crime often would take place, sweep everybody off, throw them into prison, and then say, hey, you know, do it on a Friday and say, guess what? You're stuck here all weekend. We don't have a judge you can see till Monday. Or you can sign away your constitutional rights and say that you won't sue us and we'll let you out. And then he gets people off. I mean, you know, O'Malley has to answer for this, and he should have had to answer for this a long time ago. And I'm not being critical. I like a lot of his stances now. But this, you know, this is bad stuff, and he did it for his political career. And, you know, no thought to whose lives get ruined in the process and what occurs. And the fact that, you know, that you're not really solving the problem. That the guy, he makes the point that you know, these guys, they get overtime pay if they show up in court, you know, as witnesses. So the motivation also, if you're pushing these guys to just say, you know, arrest as many people as possible and we'll send you into court as many times as possible, you can make a lot more money that way.
Right.
And then the guys end up getting promoted who've arrested, you know, 100 people that month, even if none of them actually end up getting convicted, versus the guy that arrests one, does his job right, or her, I should say, does her job right also, and puts them away. And these are all, I mean, again, I've never had a better view into our criminal justice system than since I joined the Innocence Project board, which I've talked about with you. And my God, our criminal justice system is broken in so many ways. And these are some of the ways that he was talking about that come from Baltimore specifically, some of them policies of O'Malley, some of them just generic parts of what became the culture there of how the police behaved. But a lot of them, of course, driven by a lot of our problems overall, which is the war on drugs, which is just, you know, we know in some ways what a catastrophe it is.
Yeah, I mean,
but we don't even know enough ways. I mean, it is such it literally is one of the biggest catastrophes in the history of this country. I think it literally is.
You know, the interesting thing about his take on the war on drugs, Simons, is that it's not necessarily that one-to-one relationship in terms of incarceration rates, but what it did is it really ruined police work and led to sort of the systemic harassment that we see. Because
that's right.
Because then it becomes sort of this like all-encompassing, like you're almost always illegal in terms of the relationship with the police to the citizens. The citizens are
almost... Well, if you want to arrest somebody, there's almost any justification for it, because you can just claim, as he points out, that you saw somebody with a baggie. I mean, because and they know that they're in deep crap from that because of the kinds of charges we have because of our war on drugs and the priority placed on that. It takes away from any relationship the police have with the citizens, and it gives them outsized power. And, you know, there's many sayings, and the biggest one, or the probably most famous one, being about what absolute power does. The more power that you give these people over individuals' lives to destroy lives and without transparency, this is inevitable. It's an inevitable product of this. And that's – so, I mean, obviously he pointed out what's – and some of the stuff has now been changed in Baltimore, the way they are policing, which is good. And it's an improvement. I mean, but these are the kinds of reforms we need in police departments. We need among prosecutors. We need these reforms throughout the country. And you know, for me to be seeing this, you know, watching this as sort of like anybody else as a spectator what's going on in Baltimore versus what I've seen firsthand in some of the documents I've seen doing the Innocence Project stuff. You know, combining both of those, you can't help but say, you know, this is, I can't think of the author of the book, but, you know, The Third Jim Crow, which is about essentially that's what our prison system has become. And, I mean, it is a negative feature in every way imaginable, from ruined lives to militarized police to proliferation of drugs to proliferation of weapons, you know, spread of disease. And, I mean, you can go on and on. The cost to our society economically, there's no positive from it, nothing. At least with some bad issues, you can find a positive. I dare anyone to find any positive aspect of the war on drugs, how it's benefited our society at all.
Now, we should also, I mean, there's sort of two parts to this, right? Because, and it's one thing, and even in the context of when we were talking about Michael Brown and other, Michael Brown in particular in Ferguson. But the on one hand, you have the way that the police relate to members of this community. And then sort of when you step back from that, you also have to sort of see, like, the police are really a manifestation of a broader problem in terms of the way that society is treating these communities. In other words, these people are living in squalor. There was some reports that it is likely, you know, you had Freddie Gray and his sister had lead poisoning. I saw some reports that when they were kids, there was surveys that showed about 13,000 kids had gotten lead poisoning, essentially in that part of Baltimore, in that area of Baltimore. But that if they used the type of screening that they use today, that number would have been closer to 30,000. So, in other words, we have a segment of the population in Baltimore, and this plays out, I think, in many cities across the country, where we have basically housed them in a ghetto, slum, whatever you want to call it, and with no services or limited services, with no hope, with no jobs, with, victims of redlining and victims of mortgage scams and just living in not just in poverty, but also a complete lack of hope and potential. And then basically what society says to the cops is, okay, and now it's your job to make sure they stay there. And so there's addressing the failure of the cops to treat the way that they sort of criminalize this community. And then there's also sort of the broader addressing of the problems in Baltimore that I think, frankly, that exists obviously in other places as well, that is beyond the ability of a city government to deal with.
No, these are everything that, especially since the Reagan years, but really a legacy that is an easy sort of, it's easy to kind of go back and trace from slavery to Jim Crow. I mean, obviously, in many of these African-American communities, we have all sorts of different problems when it comes to certain among rural, poor, white communities we've also ignored. But this, particularly when you're looking at some of these urban neighborhoods and how we've treated people, it almost becomes an inevitability. I mean, first of all, you know, obviously, if you're impoverished, if you're hungry, you know, if you have no hope and no options, and the people on the corner who are dealing drugs are people who have the money, those are bad enough motivations. But let's add in there now for a second that, you know, when you're bringing up this whole thing about lead paint, well, we've talked about this. I'm pretty sure we've talked about this on this show. You know, when all these criminologists have looked at why the crime rate has gotten so low, this is one of the, I mean, this is an amazingly interesting thing, and also tragic in that they think that that lead paint has led to violent behavior. So if you're these communities and you've got these sort of racist saying, well, look, it's just black people, you know, doing whatever. First of all, anybody who's desperate enough is going to behave in a certain way. I'm sorry. But let's add in that maybe we're talking about people that have been poisoned to the point where it's affecting their behavior.
People can go back and listen. I think we've done two or three shows actually on this phenomena, and it's actually tied in primarily the crime rates started to drop dramatically in this country and internationally, usually about 15 to 20 years after unleaded gasoline is outlawed. And presumably also as a function of unleaded paint being outlawed as well, and being abated. And you know, this is just one more thing that if you are poor in this country, and particularly you're living in an urban area, this is something that hasn't been there's been no remediation of this stuff.
That's right. So it turns out that this is just another way, you know, food, and when it comes to nutritional deprivation, and it comes to deprivation in terms of personal security and education and all these other things that we've just sort of thought, yeah, just ignore them as if it will just go away because that's smart to think that. But now we're adding in this factor on top of it. You know, which is maybe these are people that are suffering from certain types of, I mean, I don't know if it's mental illness, I'm not sure, elevated levels of certain toxins, but whatever it is, it's clearly something that many researchers believe affects people's behavior and makes them more violent. Well, what's the shock here then if we're talking about very specific communities where there's more lead, you know, in the paint? And so, I mean, this is, you know, these are all the kinds of factors that have been ignored. It seems we only pay attention when this kind of a thing happens. I'll put one thing out there also. I've talked to this show before about some of the stuff that I've done to try to fight to get President Obama to raise the overtime threshold. And I've done work with Nick Hanauer, who I think either Sam, you've had him on the show. You've
yes.
probably talked about him.
I think at the very least on
Ring of Fire.
Yes.
You know, who he was an original investor in Amazon, and obviously that what comes with that is doing quite well financially, but he's incredibly progressive and has talked about the pitchforks coming for people like us and sort of said morally we should do something. But even if you don't want to look at the moral equation, if you're a one percenter and you think you can look at this and think it just goes away, you have no understanding of history. And they're coming for us at some point, you should know. So he sent out a tweet that went pretty viral. A lot of people tweeted out, and I am, of course, trying to find it now. So it's the kind of thing that one would want to have ready if they were going to give it that kind of an introduction. But this is me we're talking about.
Paraphrase.
So, I mean, essentially that, you know, that this kind of inequality in history – it's only but ended one way, that you can't get to these levels of inequality and think, oh, it'll just solve itself, or oh, nothing will happen. That anyone with any cursory examination of history knows how this ends up. If you allow this kind of inequality to go on, you get many more Baltimores, and this is only a sign, it's a signal to us, something that should wake us up. You know, and here's what it is. He said, you show me a highly unequal society and I'll show you a police state or an uprising.
Right.
There are no counterexamples, none. And that's exactly it. Find me a counterexample where this kind of inequality has gone on and a society has thrived and there hasn't been an uprising or a revolution. I dare one to look in history and find it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've yet to really see... You know, that's the thing, is that it's you don't really see a lot of addressing of that broader issue in this context. Now, you know, Hillary Clinton came out earlier in the week, and good for her. It's, you know, the idea of the essential, I wouldn't say the presumptive, but at least the sort of leading potential for nominee for the Democratic Party coming out and giving a speech like she gave. I mean, basically calling for less police intervention, less incarceration. That, you know, that's something that we have not heard from Democrats in a long time. Now, granted, this is a different era, and, you know, even the conservatives are talking about prison reform. But
yeah.
It's good to hear the leading candidate. We're not going to see that on the right come out and say, and we should just mention that she had five essentially points to her speech, We need to focus on these interactions with the police. Police need to wear body cams. We need to look at the rate of incarceration for African Americans. The police militarization has to stop. And then the overall era of mass incarceration needs to end. I mean, so this is all good. And but we should also say that later in the week, Bernie Sanders jumps in the race yesterday. Yep. And he is someone who is going to be talking about, I think, more, you know, and I think it's probably the first time that we've heard this word in any of what the candidates have had to say at this point, poverty. Yes. In his opening statement, we're going to need to hear more about poverty on top of the sort of we need to help the middle class.
Yeah, people don't get how important it is that Bernie Sanders is running. I don't think enough people understand how that's going to change everything about this race, because you have a voice that I think is far left as you can be in sort of acceptable and often unacceptable. But
well, I mean, I think it's far left as senators go. Let's put it that way.
No, yeah, well, that's what I was saying. It's far left in acceptable conversation, you know, when acceptable as determined by our major media. Is what I'm saying, not as far left as it goes. It goes much further left than that out there. My point is that normally a voice like his will not get the kind of megaphone he will now get.
Right.
And that's why it was so important for him to become a U.S. senator and get that promotion for being a congressman, for being one of 100 and having the kind of platform that's given him. And, you know, it's also important how much the media has changed, because, you know, the Huffington Post is one of the biggest news sites in the world. It will cover him. You know, I can't make the same point about MSNBC with recent ratings, but they are a channel, and they're on cable, and so is CNN and others who will cover what he says, not to mention all the places where I write, the Daily Beast, where you are here, people, how people get their information, hell, Twitter, and what he says now, Hillary Clinton and the Republicans will have to respond to. And that's enormously important, because most of the things, and that's why when I said as far left, I was trying to be clear, as the media will allow, and you said as a senator, and I was like, yes, not regular people, is that almost everything you'll hear Bernie Sanders say is squarely in the mainstream of where Americans stand, from increasing Social Security to being against this free trade agreement, free in quotes, you know, to believing the minimum wage should be raised massively, and a variety of other factors, being like paid sick and maternal leave. And I mean, these are all things that if you go out and poll, you'll find anywhere from 55% to 80% of people support. And yet we're not allowed to talk about a lot of them. And so he will be. And I think Hillary Clinton understands what the challenge is to her, is that, and it seems like she does so far, that if she is this cautious candidate, I mean, on the emails, not so much, but at least with some of the policy, if she's this cautious candidate and thinks she can get by giving half loaves, people will be uninspired and she will lose. But if she's willing to step up and go big, as she just did, and when issues like this come up, prove that she will be transformational, that she's not going to, you know, cut around the edges, but that this system as it is right now, it is not working, and it is counterproductive, and individual lives are being ruined in the thousands, if not millions, but it's also ruining our society and what it's doing to it, and it needs to be changed. And so I think that Bernie and, you know, Hillary Clinton's hopefully increased aggressiveness. I would have said Martin O'Malley. I guess we have to see how he comes out of this whole thing. Maybe it's a kind of time where if he can be honest and maybe have contrition for what he did, and maybe even use the W word and say I was wrong. I think that could do a hell of a lot for him. I don't know let's see if he has the strength of character to do that. And you know, let's see how that affects Republicans. But I'll say very quickly, I did some work in the past for a group called Just Detention International, and we were trying to work on passing regulations to try to prevent prison rape, which obviously is a terrible problem. And you do have you brought up that there are new coalitions on this. You do. You have evangelical Christians now joining with progressives on the issue of incarceration, and then some of the libertarian Republicans, although I think that's a term that's overrated. But you do have a lot of evangelical Christians who realize that the conditions shouldn't be what they are, joining with the left. And I think a lot can get done around this. You know, there is that bill that Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker and Rand Paul,
right.
Rand Paul, who just got himself into a bit of trouble and maybe a worse messenger on this now. But, you know, I think you're going to see more of that because of some of the coalitions that are building, and that will be a good thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm very excited. I don't know. I don't know why I got so excited when Bernie announced, because obviously we sort of knew that he was going to. But you start to really sort of feel the potential of what he could add to this race. And I should say, you know, someone pointed out, you're going to see a lot of like Bernie Sanders long shot candidate, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. You know, he polls somewhere around where Chris Christie is. I mean, can you imagine Bernie Sanders getting the media attention that Chris Christie had? Now, Chris Christie is also trending down. You know, Bernie
Chris
Sanders,
Christie,
this is where Bernie Sanders
sort of
started.
Funny to watch now.
And I should say, with Chris Christie, in about 28 minutes from when we are speaking right now, we're going to have a much better sense of whether or not Chris Christie is going to have to be dealing with possible indictments now.
Going to the pokey when his former aide comes out and takes the guilty plea. That's right. It's going to be
today at 1. I should just clarify for people.
He's thrashing in all directions now. It's kind of fascinating, Christie. He's sort of, I'll cut Social Security and I'll enforce pot laws. And, I mean, basically you can tell when someone's thinking and thrashing and looking for attention when they're just saying the dumbest things and clearly just saying anything.
I think he's just trying to raise money for his criminal defense fund, frankly.
I bet you're right.
Because
he's dealing to the far right and the especially the corporate right.
Pete Peterson.
Right.
Yep. And so, you know, what's going to happen today is at 1 o'clock, there are going to be indictments. You've got a guilty plea that is coming from David Wildstein. This is more or less confirmed. My understanding is that in New Jersey, the reporters saw him driving to the courthouse at like 5 a.m. in a white van. But it's not just going to be Wildstein. Wildstein is going to put in a plea, but there are going to be indictments. Fishman being the New Jersey U.S. attorney. Remember, we still have not heard from the New York, the New York U.S. attorneys. So that
right.
could still be coming as well. But Fishman, I believe, is the U.S. attorney from New Jersey, and he's going to be announcing other indictments, according to reporting, at least in the Times. And so it'll be interesting to see who those indictments
Andrew
are.
Cuomo?
I have a sort feeling we're going to see, my guess is, and sort of it's alluded to in this Times piece, that we could see David Sampson. David Sampson was the former chair of the Port Authority, at least in the New Jersey side, very big Republican operator. A close sort of confidant to Chris Christie, also at a law firm, which was relevant because the Port Authority kept helping out potential clients and clients of Sampson's law firm. Well, Sampson, over the past, 10 months, has not only resigned from the Port Authority, but resigned from his own law firm. His name was taken out of the law firm, not typical, and is apparently awaiting to see whether or not he gets indicted. So all of this is happening. But my point being, just to get back to what the point was, that Bernie Sanders should be taken at the very least as seriously as Chris Christie was before it was clear that he was running into this mess of crap. And I think on the Democratic side will be, because there's not going to be as many voices, frankly.
That's right. I think he automatically will be, because I think there is just a much stronger progressive coalition that includes activists, media, politicians than there was even a couple years ago. And then on top of that, again, you factor in the times we're in, what is going on, the level of inequality, the level of corruption, the fact that basically you can pull Anthony Kennedy and find out what he believes on any subject. He's for gay marriage. All right, we'll probably have gay marriage. He thinks that any amount of spending should be allowed in elections. We'll probably have that, and figure out, you know, where we're going to go and where we have gone on the corporate stuff, because he's so conservative. And in the end, so there's this huge opening, and we've got a guy who's got a passionate voice. We've got a very different media and activist landscape, and we've got, as you point out, fewer candidates. I mean,
it's going to be interesting also to watch like what happens at caucuses, because caucuses are going to be the one place where Bernie Sanders is going to actually have a chance, I think, to win, you know, early on. So we shall see on that. But I want to touch on one thing, Cliff, because we don't have too much time left. And you and I have talked about this. But I think this is the most underreported story of the week and perhaps of this election so far. Earlier this week, and I've teased this story over the course of this week, but it's really, really important, I think. Yeah. Earlier this week, Jeb Bush announced that his political action committee, because of course he has not officially announced he is entering the race. That's my understanding, anyways.
Yes.
He told his donors that his political action committee had raised more money in 100 days than any other modern Republican political operation. Some people are saying it's $100 million in 100 days, which is sort of amazing. Now,
if I'm correct, let me just ask this. It's not just his political action committee as in his sort of leadership PAC. It's his super PAC, right?
Yes.
The distinction being that you can only give, what, $5,000 or whatever to a PAC during the primary in general, whereas a super PAC can give as much as you want.
That's right.
Corporations can, yeah.
That's okay, right. Go ahead. This is one of those anonymous donors, fill the coffers of the PAC type of situation that supposedly once he becomes a candidate, he will have no relationship with, right?
Yep.
And so this is at the beginning of this week. Well, about 10 days ago, a little bit less, there was a story in the AP saying that that his PAC, Right to Rise, super PAC, as you say, was actually going to handle and take over a lot of the operations of what campaigns have typically done in the past. So, in other words, this PAC, which he supposedly have nothing to do with, is now going to be in charge of things like television advertising, direct mail. It's also, according to this piece in the AP, it could also get involved in as data gathering, online advertising, running phone banks.
It's going to do a lot of the stuff traditional campaigns did, which is sort of, again, what a similar thing to what the Koch brothers will be doing with their $900 million. Right. I mean, that's why I brought up Anthony Kennedy before. He thought this was okay, and it really does all come down to him because we know on most things, Roberts can be an exception here and there, but mostly it's a 4-4 game. And I think Kennedy wrote that decision that there would be no impropriety if it wasn't a quid pro quo, there'd be independence. Yes, sure. That was smart thinking. A lot of foresight there. And this is just a natural evolution if you think about it, because until you're a candidate, you can talk with the people who are doing this stuff.
Exactly. So
there's no point. You might as well just not become an. And I think this will evolve to other offices too if we don't get rid of it.
Well, that's
not just in the. It's good because with the kind of money we're now talking about, the growing fortunes of billionaires, why wouldn't they do this for congressionals? I mean, a devoted super PAC to one person, really, at this point, you just need a billionaire you're friends with who's willing to give 20, I mean, especially if you're running for Congress, I mean, right? 25, 50 million, sets up a separate operation, but before you declare, you keep talking, you make sure all the pieces are in place. Then, oops, I declared now we can't talk, as if you can't sort of put up things and say things publicly as a wink, wink. So you tell the others what to do. Like, hey, this poll came out. It only shows we have trouble with this one group, wink, right? Once you say it publicly,
Exactly. In fact, if I remember correctly, they found in the past, I think in the past election cycle, there was like a website, like a forum, essentially, that was sort of just for people in the know. And it was like, here's what I think they should do, and blah, blah, blah. And that's basically the way that they communicate.
And as long as it's public, then you're able to do it.
Right. They don't even have to be that clandestine about it. I mean, we know the enforcement on this is a joke. So I think this is something that I don't know was really – I've never heard it articulated exactly this way. Because I think this is sort of really brings it into relief that what we're going to see is the campaign, the official campaign, is going to be the functional equivalent of the address in the Bahamas, right? The P.O. box for the corporation that wants to. And so you got the campaign. They don't have to raise any money. You're going to have the PAC raising all the super PAC, raising all the anonymous dollars. The campaign is really going to have no responsibilities other than being maybe just like a travel agency for the candidate. And all of the other stuff is going to be outsourced to the super PAC. There's going to be some mechanism in which they communicate, and it's going to be quite obvious. I guess it's conceivable that down the road you could have like a rogue super PAC, but highly unlikely, because everyone has the incentive of playing ball so they get the next cycle so that they're running, you know, somebody else's super PAC. And that's basically it. We're going to have the campaigns themselves are going to be out of the business.
And what this is going to evolve into, I'll tell you right now, I can see this already, is the biggest problem you run into as a candidate in terms of when you attack other candidates is that it makes you less likable. So if you can send winks and nods and outsource that whole operation and sort of go on TV and say, you know, I think Hillary Clinton has, with those emails, they tell me she's got a real problem with transparency. Wink, right? And the other side knows that you're going to go after her as cloistered, you know, closed. I mean, people can figure it out. We can figure out where candidates are going. Read between the lines. It's really not tough. And so now you can outsource it. The oppo can be done there. Millions of dollars of opposition research can be done there on the other candidate. The negative ads, the negative mail, and frankly, if you want to, you could just run the positive side of things. I mean, obviously, the other side, the super PAC can do that, some of that too. But the point being, then you sound all cheery and positive, and when attacks happen, like, hey, I'm not coordinating with him, and I can't get him to stop. You know, I mean, I ask you to stop. Please stop right now. I do not condone this. And then, of course, your super PAC person who isn't coordinating with you says, no, we believe this must be out there and part of the conversation. Done. You have effectively outsourced the part that makes people like you the least.
Indeed.
I think we're headed to that place. I mean, just when you think politics can't get more negative, you know, and again, it's for one candidate. No longer we're talking about, you know, this is the super PAC that helps elect senators or whatever. We're talking about each individual candidate having one of these. And I think eventually, if this isn't changed, this will get down to the state legislative level. You'll see state legislative seats costing a couple million dollars at least.
Yep.
Because that's where we're headed.
Yep.
And TV can make money off of it. Consultants can make money off of it. There's too many people who are at the trough who are profiting from this. And
there's nothing, holding back that money now, right? I mean, because if you can donate through a super PAC and you're essentially giving to a campaign, you can give unlimited amounts of money, almost totally anonymous. And, so there's no reason not to. I mean, that's one of the other, aspects of the massive income inequality we have. But Cliffy, thank you so much. As always, a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Sam.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
Bye. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Kindler. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, this just in. This just in.
Hello?
Well, wait a second.
Oh, not yet.
This just in.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, Andy Kindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Yes, there it is.
Yeah.
Ladies.
That's the song they're going to play when the Nazis come back and round me up. That's the song they're going to play as they come in the door.
That's and it was at, yes, there you go.
Hey, that's the quickest Nazi reference I've ever done.
That is it. Show. That is on the show. We have now broken a new record. Kindler gets to the Nazis within 30 seconds.
Zero to Nazi in 30 seconds.
There you go, ladies
it's
and gentlemen.
Gonna be Jeb, it's going to be Jeb Bush's campaign slogan. Am I right?
Folks, and if you're in Cincinnati, this could be yours and more, right? Is that where you are now, Andy? You're in Cincinnati?
75 degrees in Cincinnati. Tonight we're going to have Andy Kindler at Go Bananas. Andy Kindler headlining Go Bananas. Come on. And the eighth caller gets 30, 35 free tickets. The phones are not lining up at all.
There you go. what comedy club are you playing at tonight, Andy?
It's Go Bananas Comedy Club.
Is it really?
Which Lenny Bruce used to play all the time.
Go Bananas?
I'm going to go to Go Bananas. Tonight, he would tell his friends, left-wing friends. He would tell Allen Ginsberg, why don't you come down, meet me at Go Bananas?
Let me ask you a question. When you go play at Go Bananas in Cincinnati, how well do you do well?
I didn't do well. This is how I start every anecdote about me on the road. I didn't do well last time. But now that I have all these credits and I'm tweeting 30, 40 hours a day, people even are responding less.
When was the last time you were in Cincinnati doing comedy?
Seven years ago.
Really?
And I was very actually, it was the only time. You know how Kathy Griffin, when she tells an anecdote, everybody looks horrible except for her? And then Cher kicked me in the head, you know, those kind of things?
Right.
I made up an anecdote about the club that was based on an untruth. I was making fun of the name, and I thought they also had an item on their menu called Silly Chili. And my bit was, does everything have to be hilarious at a comedy club? Can I have Silly Chili? Can I have funny fries? Can I have fish sticks? Can I have hamburgers? But then it wasn't on the menu, so I had to apologize on stage. I didn't have to.
Are you seriously? You really did have to apologize?
I know, I didn't have to, because I'm filled with guilt, even down to this level.
So, well, I guess what I'm asking you is that, when you play in Cincinnati, and I have to say, the first time I ever went on a stand-up stage was in Louisville, Kentucky. And it was an open mic night, and I was visiting a friend, and I had just, been traveling, and so I stopped, and I was like, I want to try and do stand-up. I got very drunk. And went on stage, and I was in the bathroom afterwards, and somebody came up to me and was like, I liked what you did. You know, you reminded me of that guy who does those movies. And I'm like, I'm not sure. And he's like, you know, the guy from New York. Woody Allen? Yeah! Now, this was 25 years ago, right? I mean, so it was not like, you know... It's not like today where, you know, like Woody Allen was
pretty... That would be a little problematic if somebody said that to you today.
Well, and I was like, it's Woody Allen. Yeah, yeah. And I probably sounded exactly like Woody Allen, at least in cadence, because I was so drunk and it was the only, you know, sort of reference I had. But my sense is that when you go to Laugh Riot or whatever it is in Cincinnati, it's basically like the Brotherhood meeting, right, from the local temple or something.
Well, I don't know. No, it's first of all,
Temple Beth Emanuel, our night out. We're going to see Andy Kindler at the Cincinnati Comedy Club.
Well, first of all, I got five shows ahead of me.
Really?
So let's remain positive. I wouldn't say the crowds in Cincinnati are quite like Louisville. Not that I want to put down Louisville. Not that any potential employer, I'm not there for you. But it might be slightly more cosmopolitan.
Yeah, well, actually, Cliff Schechter, I think, is probably there. We just got off the phone with Cliff.
He's from here?
Well, I think he lives now at least in Cincinnati or somewhere around there, somewhere in Ohio. I don't know. I don't know.
He gets free tickets to tonight.
Bingo! We'll find out if he listens to the show after we hang up on him.
I doubt that he's going to. No, he follows me. I follow him. Well, this is what happens on Twitter.
Well, we bring it all together. Now, speaking of Twitter, last night, you said, I'll be on the Majority Report with Sam Cedar later today. I'm going to sleep now, so I'm ready to bring it.
Yeah.
And then Liz Winstead responded, I'm sure you'll be, quote, on fleek.
Yeah, I have no idea. What is that? You don't even know what that means, right?
And so I have two questions for you. What does on fleek mean? I don't know. And B, what is it that you're going to bring today?
Well, that's always an empty promise. I took a lot of Tony Robbins courses years ago. So I have this. In fact, I was once on a plane with a Tony Robbins kind of guy, and we were talking about the Montreal Just for Last Festival, and he said, "I hope I get to play it." I mean, I know I'll get to play it one day. So, and then the other thing that happened on that flight that was very, very funny to me is he said, "Do you have goals?" He said, "Do you have goals?" I thought he meant, "Am I a gold member on American Airlines?"
What did you say? Like, I've completely qualified. In fact, I'm close to being platinum.
Early, and it's very nice.
All right. So wait a second. So what does on fleek mean?
I really couldn't figure it out. That's what I felt like I really am. It's like my mother says, she knows she's getting old because every week she recognizes less people in the People magazine. I really couldn't even figure out what the urban translation was. Is it kind of on fire or? I don't know. You kids are young. You know what's happening.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know too much. I've seen it be used. I always took it as like, you know, like on point, like I guess something like that.
Okay. It's not that special.
It sounds like a contraction of Fleet Week.
That is not what it is.
That would be strange. Like wrong. If you're going to be, I'm sure you'll be on Fleet Week. I don't know what that means, but.
Well, I know I'll be on fleek.
I know I'll be on fleek. Well, this is my problem a lot with the kids, with the urban dictionaries and my least favorite thing is when someone says SMH, and I always have to look it up. I finally
shake my head.
Yeah, how does that help your tweet? And I really believe this, tapping my toe. I mean, what does this add? Wiping sweat off my brow and reaching for a glass of milk?
Start wiping sweat off my brow and reaching for a glass of milk, I will back you on Twitter, Andy.
Wipe my brow. WMB.
Hey, that's what they should have found in Iraq was WMB.
Now,
boom.
Andy, all right, well,
boom.
We have people in Cincinnati, Andy, so you got to be careful because we're trying to sell some tickets here.
Easy David K.
Andy, what is new? Where are you these days? Are you now transitioning in from like Obama bot to Hillary bot? Is that where you're at this point?
I'm all Hillary, and in fact, she's hired me to do opposition fleek search. And so you ready for my Bernie Sanders? What's his initial stand for? BS. Hello? Hey, do you want Martin O'Malley? Do you really want Mom running the country? Good night.
There you go. So it's turned from Obama bot into Hillary assassin.
Hillary's Twitter drone.
Well, you know, I've had sinus problems trying to hold my nose when I go into. It's caused me sinus problems when I hold my nose to go in. Now, I never was a big Hillary fan, but now that Ron Fournier goes after her every day, I'm all for her now.
Wow. Now, look at the level of sophistication. I want to just, like, point this out, okay?
Okay.
There is no other comedian in the country who has that level of sophistication about what's going on with the political media to make a Ron Fournier joke, all right?
Yeah.
When Rod Fournier came out against Hillary, I mean, I changed my tune. Am I right, folks?
No, but I mean, I'm being serious about this. I am being totally serious about this. You know, you don't get the credit you deserve, Andy.
I really think, except for the fact that I don't have full knowledge of any topic, I've got so many minutia points I don't get credit for it.
Well,
what,
am I
Harold Stassen? Thank you.
Boom. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you're not just a jack of all trades. You're a jack of all sort of mini traits.
Well, let me jot that down. Let me put that into my Fleek resume. I am Fleek.
I cannot wait to hear back from people from Cincinnati. Andy Kindler tonight started his set by saying, "I'm a jack of all mini trades."
I'll blame you. I will blame you so fast. But here's the thing. That guy got under my skin. I'm watching that horrible Morning Joe one morning for about 5 minutes. And that guy's on there, and he's bashing Hillary. And I start to he says Obama's a boy. Why can't Obama grow up? And I start to scream at him online. And then Matthew O'Dowd starts to chime in. Matthew O'Dowd, whose claim to fame was he figured out in 2005 that Bush was evil. That's his claim to fame. Again, nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No.
No, we know.
We all know. That's what I'm saying.
You are on Fleek, man.
This is where it's you're fleeking us out.
Ron Fournier could even lead his way to a good
column. Fournier was a reporter for the AP, and then I think he went to
isn't he at the National Journal?
Yeah.
And he writes those, like, leadership columns. He writes the same column every time. Obama doesn't know how to lead. It's about leadership. Play golf with the Republicans. Lead.
It's sort of like a David Broder type, but maybe a little bit more to the right. But, yes, it was all about – for him, it's all about leadership. I mean, this is the time of the year, the time of the cycle that we start to hear from the centrists. Like, you know, David Brooks was on it today talking about Baltimore and, you know, just the give me your take on all that. I mean
– Well, I have to tell you something. I don't normally like Wolf Blitzer, but he really stepped up to the plate when he gave out the retail price of every item that was coming out of CVS that day. I mean, he was he sobbed when he saw a clock radio that looked very much like one that was stolen from him. And he really got to the – it was like, here's one of his reporter, the journalistic type lines was, can you believe what we're seeing here? And where are the cops? I don't see a cop anywhere. No cops anywhere. That guy, if he doesn't win some kind of award, like Fleek of the Year.
Right, exactly.
Fallbacks.
Was he wearing his famous vest? Remember, that's how Wolf Blitzer got famous, was he was in Iraq during Shock and Awe, I think it was, if I remember correctly. And he was wearing a vest. And maybe it was like the first Iraq. I'm getting confused now. But I know he was sort of like prominent for wearing one of those reporter vests. You know, the fishing vest.
And then he was also in the Israeli military, wasn't he?
Yes. And I think he also worked for AIPAC at one point. Which I know.
Don't say anything bad about Netanyahu, my hero.
How much do you love Netanyahu?
I hate him. I hate him like poison. And then, and of course, he's such an he's a Muslim. He's so extreme, right? Am I right, people? He's a Muslim extremist. All of us. If you listen to Bill Maher, that's the only problem. Yeah, he could end the world could end up of being blown up because Netanyahu wants to get reelected. But that's not the real problem in the world. It's the Muslims that are the problem.
Are you the most, like, you know, I think, like, you are, you know, to like Anita Sarkeesian to Gamergate like you are to the new atheists. Do you think that's the case? Like you're public enemy number one to those sort of Sam Harris fans.
Yeah, and then I blocked this guy who's like a comedian. All of a sudden, he comes after me.
Who was it?
Jonathan Daniel Brown.
Who the heck is that?
I don't really know who. I don't know why I was following him. I'm not quite sure why I was following him. Because, you know, what I do is I look at how many followers they have.
Right. You only follow verified people. Like, I'm one of the few non-verifieds you follow. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, I hired a private detective to see what's the problem with your verification. Right. And who are you who you say you are?
Right. Huh?
But, no, so anyway, my whole thing, first of all, I got enraged at Adam Gopnik. This whole idea that because you have to love these cartoons. You know, I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know anything about Charlie Hebdo, but 7 hours after that, you know, it was. And of course, do I have to say murdering someone is like? I'll make a comment just because I don't have to like the art of these people, and then someone will come back. Oh, but it's okay to murder them? No, I don't believe that's what I'm saying. I don't think I've ever said that before.
So wait a second. Are you coming out and saying you are against murder?
Yes, I'm saying I don't like the I don't think putting the Muhammad on a dog is political satire. But let me finish, Sam. I don't believe the people who made that cartoon should be murdered. Thank you.
It's interesting that you say that second, though.
Why is that? You think I'm covering up for it?
Well, it's just interesting that you say I don't think they should have done this drawing, and then you say I don't think they should be murdered, as opposed to starting with I don't think they should be murdered.
You're right.
I think that's just an indication of your priorities.
Yes, I've never put the predicate in the right area where the I don't know anything about grammar, but I never have subjected the predicate in the I should say people shouldn't be murdered, comma. But I don't like the art that much. And Adam Gopnik, who I think I've actually enjoyed some of his articles, he quotes Salman Rushdie. You know, and Salman Rushdie, who knows a little bit about things in this area, he said the people who didn't attend the Penn Award conference are six people in search of character. So that's how much Salman Rushdie believes in free speech. Is if someone disagrees with his take on the artists, then he's saying they lack character. Well, I say Salman Rushdie. Do we have to like Salman Rushdie just because we were all against the fatwa? Because I find him to be one of the most annoying people in the world, except for Bill Maher.
No, you don't have to. I mean, I think most people don't even remember the fatwa anymore. So you can. I mean, he probably does.
Does she still host the Top Chef show? Sorry.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to have problems with a fatwa if I don't cut back on the curbs, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Andy, now let me ask you this. Where do you go after Cincinnati? Like, are you going to go? Do you do a tour? Like, will you go through, like, Alabama or Mississippi or something like that? Or do you head north? I mean, where do you go from Cincinnati? Where have you been? I want to. I'm trying to pick up where where Marin is left off.
I go right to Knoxville. I go right to Knoxville, and then I see if the funny bone from the 80s is still there, right. And then I try and book myself there. And then it's Birmingham, and then it's what I do is I call a state and I say, what would you say is the most backwards area in your state, and what's the nearest club?
Now, my understanding is that you are spending like 6 weeks. You're touring all around West Virginia.
Yes, and my play on music is going to be West Virginia, the Mountain Mama song. I don't know what I'm saying.
John Denver.
Yes, that's my play on music.
But sung by like a klezmer band.
Yes, and then I get on stage and I say, "Look, I don't believe in guilt by association." But I'm sure all of your parents were KKK members. Show of hands. Show of hands. Who here, if I said to you burning cross on a lawn, who here would have a positive reaction to that? That's how I start the show.
Now, Andy, tell me something. What is pissing you off in terms of entertainment? I mean, we can see, you know, politically, it seems like you're getting more and more political, it seems to me. I mean, you've always been very politically engaged. But, I mean, when you start talking, you start complaining about Ron Fournier, you're in dangerous territory. Pretty soon you're going to be, like, you know, you could make yourself more exclusive than I do in terms of.
Watch out for the Sam Cedar career turn.
Exactly.
Beware.
Be careful.
You know what?
You don't want to get down to where your potential audience could actually fit into a place smaller than you're able to broadcast from.
I'll back off. I will officially back off. Well, I don't know about this, Sam, but I don't know much about it. But, you know, Adam Sandler doesn't like that I've made fun of his movies over the years. I got to tell you, I did not see Blended, but I know you did. But
five times.
I'm just guessing now. Maybe someone out there can help me. At the beginning of the movie, because you know his movies have more twists and turns than a straight hallway. His movies. I wrote that joke previous to this goddamn phone call.
Wow.
All right. So at the beginning of the movie, you're like, there's no way him and Drew Barrymore are getting together. No way in the world. They hate each other. Hate. And at some point, miraculously, there's a turnaround where they get together. That's my question.
They get blended.
I prefer them, the next movie, On the Rocks with Drew Barrymore. And
I have a feeling that's in development. Well, no, wait a second. Let's talk about the apparently a couple
Native
of dozen
Americans.
Yeah, Native Americans walked off his set because they were offended at some of the jokes, and also because they were told. They're Navajo. Their
right.
Their sort of like cousin tribe is the Apache, and supposedly they were playing Apache, but they were all dressed in Comanche outfits essentially, and which is like the functional equivalent of saying like, let's do a story about Thailand and everybody's going to have Korean names and they're going to be eating Japanese food or something.
Well, I don't know why these Native Americans, they're so touchy about everything. I mean, things have gone well for them historically in this country. They've been treated with respect. Do you have a casino, Sam? Did someone come along to you and go, here, have a casino. I'm sorry for what's happened. Put a casino over here. No. And so they're so touchy because they named one of the women Beaver Breath or whatever the thing was. And they get touchy. They get touchy just because of the horribly disgusting stereotypes that we're going to use. But they were told there would be. First of all, anybody who responds to, I'm telling you, this is going to be tasteful on an Adam Sandler movie, you have to take a little response.
Right. Exactly. But I do think that, like, also, I think based upon some of those names, I feel like there should have been a bunch of comedians who walked off the set, too. Just, like, being just as offended. Like, seriously? Are you really going to make money off of this? Like,
yeah,
are you... I don't know. I mean, I guess this stuff is aimed towards like 12-year-olds, and I think if you're 12, that is probably pretty funny.
Well, he got a call from Stephen Hawking during the shoot and said, "We cannot come up with a lowest common denominator using all of mathematics that will be able to calculate how terribly lowbrow this film is." Stephen Hawking called up. Imagine that, getting that call.
I can tell us. Give us an example of what it would sound like.
Oh, please. Oh, thank you. I told you to tee me up for this. Thank you. What are you going to do? Oh, this is Stephen Hawking, Adam Sandler.
I have been at the drawing board all day.
There's nothing funnier than Stephen Hawking.
Than a bad Stephen Hawking's impression.
That's right.
Talking to Adam Sandler.
It's not that I'm politically correct. It's just the sheer volume of unfunny.
What now, Andy? Do you ever play in Las Vegas?
Oh, what do you mean? Do I? Oh, I have. I have bombed there every single time I played there. Never had even a good moment within the show.
Where is the best place that you do in the country when you do stand up?
Well, there's a couple. There's a Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis is an amazing club.
Okay.
The Comedy Act in Bloomington is fantastic. And then in Canada, there's a club called the Comedy Bar. And wow. So I play those three clubs every month.
That's it. What about New York? You must do well in New York.
Sam, thanks again for listening to our pre-interview. As a matter of speaking of me performing in New York, Sam, segue, I'll be at Caroline's Comedy Club.
When?
On Sunday.
This Sunday?
17th. Sunday, May 17th.
Oh, okay. Because my father-in-law is in town, and my wife asked me, she said, my dad wants to go to comedy on Saturday night. Like, where should we go? And I'm like, I have no idea. She said, well, I mean, can't you just tell me who the good comedians are? And I'm like, I don't know any of these people. I said, maybe Caroline's, I guess, go to or to. And she's like, well, I'm going to call John Benjamin. I'm like, he hasn't been in a comedy club in 25 years. You don't know what you're talking about. And then just like all of a sudden she calls him and it's just sort of this quiet, like where he literally said, I haven't been to a comedy club in 25 years. And then she's like, will you text Louie and ask him where we should go? And I'm like, are you serious? Yes. And I'm like, what?
Oh, my God. That is actually they don't know what happened. The scientists are looking into what happens when you text Louie. They don't know where it goes. Exactly.
It's true. I feel like he's got seven phones.
Right.
And
he's always busy. He cannot talk to you.
No.
Very, very – well, he won't talk to me, but to you, he's very busy.
Well, he can't – I mean, no. I mean, he's not going to talk to you.
I like his – I do like his look. I think I've done this joke on your show before. I do enjoy his look, American Gervais.
I didn't know that. I've never heard you say that.
Have you seen the show this year?
No, I haven't, actually.
Well, if you want your comedy not funny anymore – and you want a show that goes nowhere, and if you want to see Louis dressed up like a woman. And
oh, come on.
Out...
Don't ruin it for me now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
Now, all right. Now, Andy, we just have a moment left. Okay. How many times do you appear on Marin's show, which launches in like 2 weeks?
I don't keep track of these things. 3 episodes.
You know, I did one. I was on it this year.
Were you Sam Cedar or were you
yes,
a Jew?
I was Sam Cedar. I was not just generic Jew. I was upgraded to actually me.
And did you take – remember I told you about that – I gave you that acting tip, which I think works for all actors. And that is – what I do is I weigh an extra beat after whatever – you know, to make sure that the person – whatever – I don't know what they're saying, but to make sure they've stopped.
No. No. You know what? I don't – that's not a good thing to do because they can just cut that out. What you have to do is, as soon as they stop talking, you and roll that into your first line, because that way they can't cut. So you get on camera that much longer. I'll show you. This is the technique. You say something.
So then I really believe him. Let's go to the garage and do the podcast.
That's a good idea.
Oh, you Rob Morowitz from Northern Exposure.
Exactly,
that's another way to go.
Exactly. And then you get a lot of time on camera because they can't cut. There's no place for them to cut. And sometimes it's even better if you do it. Here, I'll give you like even this is a, you know, later in the show when the editor thinks he's comfortable or she thinks she's comfortable in being able to cut around you, you do go ahead. Give me another line.
Let's put it on.
Right. I think so.
I can't imagine why nobody casts you in those shows anymore.
Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened on Married. So there's
Is that how they do it good there?
Yeah, that's good. At one point, there's a scene where I make a joke about Marin's pants, okay? And when we were in the trailer getting ready, you know, and I can't help but needle Marin, and I have a different dynamic with him than, like, you know, everybody on the set is a little bit like, we don't want to upset Mark because if he goes into a tailspin, it could ruin the shooting schedule. But that's not my attitude. And when we were in the trailer, I said something to Mark, like, wow, geez, man, what happened? Did you have, like, your ass removed? Because those and he started getting self-conscious about his pants. And so by the time we get on the set, he is like full on obsessed with the pants. And I'm like, seriously, it looks like you had like one of your buttocks removed. And he's like saying now to the wardrobe people, like, we need to change my pants. And I'm just keep teasing him about it. And to the point where the director came up to me and goes, dude, this is not helping. And I was like, I looked at the director and I said, yeah, I know. And Mark didn't even seem to be realized that I was needling him about the pants. It was fun. That was the most fun. I mean, I enjoyed the whole thing. It was really fun. But that
well,
was...
I didn't know you were such a prankster. You called me up in the hotel, and don't give out the name of the hotel, Sam.
I don't want people. I can't afford the liability involved in that.
But you called up to say, here's the front desk. We have a package. I said, I'm expecting a call right now. Oh, okay, I will bring up the package.
You got
people, I'm not conveying it. People. You put Ashton Kutcher, you made him look like a second stringer.
Oh, are you kidding? I'm making a whole nother podcast out of the times that we punk you off air.
Did you ever hear me do extreme crank yankers? I know you have to go, but maybe I can close with my. Here's my extreme crank yankers, the 90s. Hi, 911. 911, my ha-ha-ha, sir, what are you saying? Sir, I have someone on the line, and if I don't get back to them, they're going to die. Ha-ho, he, ha-ha. Sir, the person on the other line has died. This is Extreme Crack Anchors. Would you be willing to sign a release to have this recreated by puppets? Ha-ha,
All right, Andy. So what should I watch on Netflix this weekend or streaming? What movie should I watch? TV show?
Okay,
what?
Now here's a movie I saw.
Make it quick.
I've never seen it in my life before, and it is on. And I'm going to sound like an idiot because everyone's seen it. I saw Rushmore on the plane. I don't know if it's on there.
I have seen it. I'm sure it is.
Incredible movie. Incredible movie.
Wow.
And then if you get a chance. To watch if they're playing, I can't think of one bad movie to go the other way with. Anything Catherine, just put in Catherine Heigl into the search box.
All right, I don't know what that means, but I will try it.
I closed Wick again. They call me Fizzles.
Andy Kindler playing at somewhere in Cincinnati. What's the name of the club again?
Go Bananas tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday.
The Go Bananas in Cincinnati. And then next weekend, Andy will be at
Bridgetown,
Connecticut?
No, Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland.
Oh, wow. You're really traveling quite a bit. Well, Andy, fly safe. As always, a real pleasure.
I love you, Sam.
All right, thank you.
I love you, guys.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Love you, too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That's a fitting. Wow. He was on fire.
That crank yankers bit is hilarious.
He totally fleeked it.
He fleeked it. I love the.
He was on fleek, man.
I love the crank yankers bit.
Yes. Now I don't. Do people even know what the crank yankers was?
Yeah. If you were watching Comedy Central, whatever. If you were I think middle school age or above.
I'm with Busey was right on before or after that at one point.
I do not remember that.
Yeah,
show.
I don't remember that show at all.
Was the one I directed.
You directed a show?
What are you going to do? Yeah. All right, folks. Well, I guess it's going to be a freebie Friday. What can you do? The number 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the phone number. Let me just do this one story because this is freaking me out. And I don't know why this isn't getting more play, and it actually makes me a little bit concerned. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, on Tuesday of this week, asked the State Guard in Texas to monitor a U.S. military training exercise dubbed Jade Helm 15 amid suspicions that the war simulation is really a hostile military takeover of Texas. The request comes a day after more than 200 people packed a meeting in rural Bastrop County and questioned a U.S. Army commander about whether the government was planning to confiscate guns or implement martial law. And presumably in Bastrop County. Suspicions about Jade Helm intensified on some conservative websites and social media after a map labeled Texas, Utah, and parts of California as hostile for the purposes of the three-month training exercise that begins in July. U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Mark Lastoria, if that's his real name, told the crowd in Bastrop on Monday that the exercise will involve 1,200 soldiers in all four branches of the military. This is according to the Austin American-Statesman. He said people with a personal agenda about the exercise had been spreading misinformation, which is exactly what you would say if you were a military commander from the U.S. government looking to take over Texas. That's exactly what you'd say. This is all just rumors. Silliness. Lastoria spoke for 2 hours, but some left the meeting still unconvinced, which, of course, is why Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, had to put the state guard on alert for a potential invasion by the U.S. military. Now, on Wednesday, and this is where things get rather interesting, ladies and gentlemen. On Wednesday of this week, the White House said that the planned U.S. military training exercise, Jade Helm 15, would supposedly not infringe upon Americans' constitutional rights. When Josh Ernst was asked to weigh in on the governor's request that the State Guard monitor the training exercise to ensure Texans, quote, safety, constitutional rights, and private property rights and civil liberties will not be infringed, Josh Ernst, White House spokesman, said, I have no idea what he's thinking. Wonder what else you would say if you were actually planning to take over Texas. Boom! There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is... we need to rally behind these Texans. And here's the point of this story. Not just that those people in Texas are idiots. And not just that so much of Texas politics is dictated by idiots that the governor actually had to publicly say that he was telling the State Guard to monitor this. But just give you a sense of how many idiots dictate the Republican Party. Even contemplate, like, what could possibly be the equivalent on the left of this? Here is, where is this now? Okay, here is Iowa-based radio host Jan Mikkelsen asking Rand Paul to respond to this. Now, I'm going to give Rand Paul the benefit of the doubt and just say he's just run by the idiots. That's why he's got to say this.
So I get email on this every day, and I'm not up to entire speed on this. It's called the Jade Helm military maneuvers that are going on in the Southwest this summer. You have military exercises that involve civilian areas. Are you up to speed on that? Do you know what this is all about?
You know, I've gotten a few questions on it on the road, and I really don't. I'm not sure about exactly what is going on with that.
It's making some people nervous, but it doesn't take much to make people nervous nowadays. So if you get a chance, I'd like to know what the rest of the story is on that.
Look at that also.
Okay. I'm giving you a lot of work here, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, really. It's like you don't even live in my state, Jan, and I'm having to do all your cases now for you.
All right. Now, let me just say this. This is the benefit of the doubt says, well, Rand Paul's running for president in a party full of idiots. And so he's got to do their bidding. The other take is, just get the slightest bit of integrity and courage and say, you know, folks, this is a military training exercise. If people want to have a problem with military training exercises for various reasons, I'm sure that's fine. But the reason why parts of these states were probably marked hostile is because it's a military training exercise, and they're pretending that part of the place that they're training is hostile. Not that they're actually planning with 1,200 military men to, I guess, secretly take over Texas. Whatever that means. Like, get just a little bit of integrity. This is the problem, or one of the problems that we have in this country, is that this is actually a political party. This is actually a presidential candidate. I mean, this is insanity.
Sam, you know that I know that you know that I know that I'm not going to get elected president without looking into things like this. And the fact that you're just such a Jew about it, such a little stickler, just really sticks in my craw.
You know, that is not where I would have gone. Where I would have gone with that would have been like, this is going to be in my dad's email blast.
It already is in my dad's email blast. Are you out of your mind? He scours the internet all day. You see, he actually believes this stuff.
All right,
let's I'm just go. Like a trust fund baby who wants to be president. Dad's crazy.
Let's take.
He beat me with a gold bar once.
Let's take a phone call.
Very traumatic.
You're calling. Calling from a 514 area code. Who's this? Calling from a five. Calling from a 514 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. I just heard you mention something about Jade Helm.
Yes.
And I must confess, though I'm otherwise a fairly rational person, I do listen to Alex Jones a fair bit.
Well, I mean, anything for entertainment purposes, but go ahead.
Well, that's the thing. I'm willing to defend the listening of Alex Jones and that sort of thing, not just for entertainment purposes, but also for news. Some of it's strictly for entertainment purposes, but I think that actually his national paranoia actually makes him pick up really good news stories.
Okay, and how do you differentiate between the part that you listen to for entertainment and the actual news stories?
Well, okay, I suppose in as much as it's backed by other things, if he links you to other people who seem... kind of otherwise.
So give me an example of what you can get from Alex Jones in terms of good analysis and news that you couldn't get somewhere else that you have found to be credible.
Okay. So all these stories, I think it was in the wake of Ferguson that the whole notion of militarization of the police became kind of mainstream in the United States.
Right.
I don't know, because I often read sort of things that are less mainstream, as you've been able to guess by now. But I don't know, am I right to say that that's sort of when it became very mainstream?
I mean, I think it became far more apparent to people, yes.
Right. And so, you know, that's the sort of thing that Alex Jones has been talking about for a very long time. You know, it may have to do in his mind with, you know, fourth-dimensional reptilians or something like that.
But you see, here's the point, is that you could go, and we had, what's his name, Balco on the program, I don't know, a year or two ago when he came out with his book
the
about
guy.
It. Yeah. And okay. Now at the Post, Radley Balco, we had him on to talk about his book. I mean, this isn't submerged stuff. And the point is that the real problem is that when he does talk about that story, the militarization of the police, and makes it about reptilians or about changelings or about some one world government that is going to take over, then all of a sudden what it does is it takes all that energy and outrage that is legitimate about a specific problem and misdirect it and send you down a rabbit hole. So maybe you're intelligent enough to realize that the foundations and the reasons why he gets there are wrong, and therefore the reactions that you should have to that and what you can do about it is very different than what he's prescribing. But for most of the people who watch that, all it does is just drive them down a rabbit hole. And in fact, if I wanted to protect something like the idea of the militarization of police and make sure that there was no possible way for a rational backlash to happen that could actually change it from a policy standpoint, I'd do exactly what he's doing. I would do exactly what he's doing. I would drive people down a rabbit hole of conspiracy and phantasm and whatever it is. And this notion that they're helpless against this sort of rising tide of these sort of space aliens that have come out of Mount Shasta. And there's no way you can fight these guys because they've been doing it forever. I mean, that's what I would do if I was actually interested in maintaining the status quo.
So are you trying to say that Alex Jones is in on it?
I'm trying to say that I'll tell you, if Alex Jones didn't exist, then the CIA or corporate taskmasters would invent him.
Right.
Yeah.
But to get back to Jade Helm, my understanding is that whole crowd seems to think that that's an exercise that is basically training American soldiers to be used to the notion of operating in an American-type environment, basically. I think that ultimately they're right to be concerned about the particular types of operations that
Let me ask you a question. This scenario that you're talking about, where the U.S. military is being trained to operate on U.S. territory. First of all, this has happened forever. Okay. A. B. Do you really think that to the extent that the American government is going to suppress its own people, it's going to happen in Utah and Texas? Or do you think it's going to happen in urban environments where there's actually a danger? Like, I don't think the American government, in the wildest conspiracy theory you could ever come up with, is really going to care about what's going on in rural America. With all due respect. If there's people amassing? The Bureau of Land Management's not even doing anything about what's his face? About Bundy.
Right, Bundy. Clavin Bundy.
Yeah. No, that's not. I mean, to the extent that there's any threat to the American public from sort of the military in terms of civil liberties and whatnot, it's already happening. But it's happening in places like parts of Baltimore, like parts of New York City, like parts of Chicago or Detroit St. Louis.
But
let's focus on what's going to happen in the desert in Utah with 1,200 soldiers because they have a map that calls it hostile territory. I mean, that's a perfect example of why I'm saying that Alex Jones is so particularly dangerous to any real change in this country. Because while you're off chasing these ghosts, and that's all that is, that's just a ghost, that's make-believe, then you're not focusing on, hey, there's some real reforms that could happen in places where there's a real, genuine problem. And that's exactly what I'm talking about with Alex Jones.
Well, I think from either perspective,
if you want to be worried about a one world government, then people should be out there talking about the TPP. Now, I know he touches on it, but it's all sort of like set in this sort of other make-believe world. When in fact, all it is wealthy interests who are corporations and not like, you know, the Bilderberger group. It's just people with aligned agendas to make money and to maintain and influence government to the extent that they can so that they can make more money. That's all it is. But when you create some type of fantasy around it, like it's some type of superhero situation where like these are special villains with special powers. And I'm surprised that I'm even able to talk about this without them swooping in and putting me in some type of floating orb where I can't speak. I mean, come on. It's a joke.
It's as though you've listened to his broadcast before.
Oh, so of course.
We got to get comedy material.
Sorry?
We get good comedy material.
But I think, okay, you're right. People can become paralyzed thinking, there's nothing we can really do because, you know, they've got like all sorts of technologies. And anyways, the whole world is one vast conspiracy. But if you just take the stories that he brings up, I still think that, for instance, he might actually bring a lot of people to be worried about the militarization of police, for instance. Another story.
Yes,
I think
but
I got
he's
it.
Bringing them to. He's getting them worried about the militarization of the police. But there's not, according to him, there's nothing you can do about it.
Except buy some of his products. But
well, exactly. Exactly. Right. There's nothing you can do about it. And not only that, he's pointing to the wrong places where it's a problem. So he's not doing anything that is going to bring about any positive good.
Well, I'm not sure that he hasn't really dealt with stories like, for instance, like so you're mentioning in Baltimore and Chicago. I imagine you're talking about like the inner city, mostly black neighborhoods where police are abusing citizens.
Right.
You're right. That's not a particularly prominent theme on the show.
Yeah.
But,
now, isn't that shocking?
Well, I don't think he's completely avoided it, especially, I mean, I can remember some
well,
of
the Well, yeah, good for him. He didn't completely avoid the number one story on every news media that nobody can turn on the internet or watch TV. I mean, you see my point, don't you? Like, I mean, and assuming I would put you probably in one of the you know, for people who actually take him seriously, probably in the, I don't know, top 2% of discerning. And even still, I think it's problematic for someone like you.
Well, I just think as a news aggregator, he does a very good job.
Well, I have no doubt. And also sending you down the rabbit hole with all that news.
Well, not me, I wouldn't say.
Okay.
But like
you did call me about
like,
Jade 51.
Right. Well,
and you are thinking about like this is what they would do if they wanted to take over Utah, Texas, and I guess the desert in California. I mean, come on.
Right.
Dude.
No, so, you know, especially since I'm calling from well north of there in Canada, I'm not particularly worried about that myself. But I would worry about, say, troops training to be desensitized about working in an American environment.
Yeah,
in an
you know
American
what? You know what they're being desensitized to? They're getting used to fighting in terrain that is very similar to the Middle East.
Well, there's that too.
yeah, that's basically, it's not just there's that too. There's that. And then the other stuff is fantasy land. Fantasy land.
Okay, well, another story. I think I got it through there. It may have been through other publications.
Gotta be quick.
Okay. Police training with no hesitation targets. Have you heard about these?
No.
It's basically those shooting range targets with cutouts of people. And it's been shown in social psychology that if you have cutouts of people for your training targets, you're more likely to actually pull the trigger on an actual person than if you just have a round, you know,
okay.
a round target.
They've been doing this at least since Vietnam.
Right, exactly. Well, since about World War II, they've gone from soldiers shooting, I think it was around 10% of the time, and then
okay.
the soldier was exposed to well over 90%.
Okay.
Okay. And now police officers using what they call these no-hesitation targets, basically, you know, with grandma being the target or, you know, pregnant woman being the target, hence the name no-hesitation targets. You know, I think it may be, yeah, that's a smaller problem, but I...
Yeah, that is like, I don't know. I mean... The hesitation targets, the no hesitation targets, come on. Seriously. You've got an entire, segments of the population who are subject to, when they walk down the street, they get stop and frisk. They're criminalized from the day one. There's a whole raft of actual reforms that could go on. But it doesn't make it as interesting as the idea that there are no hesitation targets. They're going to shoot pregnant women. And that's a problem for you. I mean, come on.
Personal problem for me, but
no. But that's the game plan. But listen, here's my suggestion to you: yeah. Order some of his Super Beta Male Vitality, drink it, see if maybe you can see through the BS that's going on there. But I got to go. I appreciate the phone call.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye. Maybe we shouldn't make this a freebie Friday because this show is going to go long. I have a feeling today. Toniopolis. 12 to 14 hours a day is now considered around the clock. I'm not sure what that was referring to. Jesus was lefty. Six cops have been charged and arrest warrants have been sent out for them. Cliff, the book is New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. I think so. We had her on. In Obergefell versus Hodges, that is the case that was in front of the Supreme Court that we talked about earlier this week with Michael Signorelli. There was a dude that had to be removed from the gallery because he yelled something about eternal damnation. What if he was an especially savvy supporter of the same-sex marriage? Like, yeah, justice want to side with the crazy? You got your crazy right here. History will remember you and me as being the same. Try it on for size. Garen, hey, guys, happy International Labor Day, the day where almost everyone but the U.S. commemorates the Haymarket riots and the atrocities committed by the police and justice system against people who protested with some degree of fairness and dignity. The more things change. The Haymarket riots. Now, was that in Chicago? That's right. Today's May 1st.
Yes.
This was in the late 1800s. It was basically a riot following labor protests. And I got to look it up. But out of this was born, I think, sort of the international labor movement. Charlie, Refreddy Gray, this prosecutor is doing this very strangely. Wouldn't it be wiser to hold over a grand jury, present them with all the evidence, allow the officers involved to tell their side uninterrupted and without examination, then use outdated instructions at the beginning of the process to later correct them on, with a footnote? The current course is in danger of getting a conviction. Indeed. Bullprog, movie recommendation. Some of us need to sit our family down and watch American History X. There's also a good documentary called Crips and Bloods, Made in America, that outlines the deep cycle of oppression of black people. It slightly touches on a personal responsibility message at the end, but the rest illuminates the vicious cycle that's affected generations. Militant apathy. David F. and Brooks, that's all I have to say. Geraldo says protesters fought him because he's famous. Told you about that wagon driver in Baltimore. Yeah, indeed. Sick Nickel. Sam, can you talk a little bit more about how you talked to Milo about this Baltimore situation? I struggle to explain this without also sowing distrust of police. That's been something that I've been, you know, dealing with Milo since Occupy, you know, when we were down there and she met Jeff Smith and, then I had to explain to Jeff, you know, her that later that Jeff Smith got arrested. And this notion of you tell kids like you can go to the police. And it's basically I tell her that let me read Sick Nichols. I am white and middle class, which is a weird thing to throw on into any message. But I think in this context that, well, I say to her, look, part of the unfairness of this society is that the police tend to treat people who are not white and who are not affluent worse than they treat white people and affluent people. And I said, you know, so I say to her, like, and this is what's happening. And this is, you know, been an ongoing conversation that I've had with her really over the past couple of years. So she'll watch some of the stuff that's going on in Baltimore. And she knows that, particularly as of late, and I think part of it is just because it's getting now national attention, and part of it is because of video cameras, and there's a whole series of reasons this, but that black males in particular are treated poorly by the cops, and that some of them get killed. And so I explained to her, like, look, these people, you know, in this community are living in a tremendous amount of poverty. They don't have the same things that you and I have. They don't, their school's not as good as your school, and they're angry. And what they're doing is not necessarily the right thing, but it's not about right or wrong. It's a response to the way that they're being treated. And, you know, the thing with the cops is basically like, look, you can go to a cop. If you're in trouble, you can go to a cop. But understand that you're lucky that you're able to do that. And that's basically it. I mean, it's, you know, the minimum that can be done is to, in my situation, I feel like, is to make sure that my child understands the privilege that she has in society. Make her appreciate that at this point. Umar Shami. Sam, I'm also very excited about Senator Sanders running, but I can't help but feel naive for feeling such. Do you have any reason to believe that this time the national corporate media is going to give a proper airing of his populist message? I just think that he is a U.S. senator, and I don't know what that means in terms of proper airing, but I think he's going to have the opportunity to be able to deliver that message directly. And so, you know, that I think is going to be helpful. Kevin 11720. I mean, there was a piece. My old buddy from I can't remember, what was the name of that show? Radigan, Dylan Radigan show. Tim Carney, who I used to get in arguments all the time, is sort of like touting Bernie Sanders as people in his sort of quadrant of the right can actually sort of meet common ground with. So, I mean, you know, you're already starting to see that. Again, the Haymarket riots took place in 1886, the followed protest for an 8-hour work week, right, during which someone detonated a bomb and later leaders and anarchists were executed for it without evidence, mind you. Oh, wow. Maybe we should revisit that. Should have producers on the getting a labor historian. Kevin 11721. Imagine the pandemonium if the populist narrative was we won't vote for any politician who voted for invading Iraq. It was too big of an error to overlook. Censor sweep. Did you see the speech panel with Ta-Nehisi Coates at Johns Hopkins? He expanded on some of Cliff's points. I will check it out. Thank you. Very, very smart. Oh, shoot. There we go.
I like that. That was very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice, relaxing. Nice springtime music.
Let's see. Where are we? Lucifer. Is Sanders going to be able to handle his opposition in the media, or will they get him to make mistakes that will ruin his chances and to impact the conversation? No, I don't think. The thing is, I don't think he feels the pressure that a lot of the politicians do when they're running for president, because I think he's running for president to deliver a message. And so all he has to do is deliver that message. He doesn't have to worry about the other things. And Andy Kindler is hilarious. On fleek equals on point. You need to play that ominous music a bit more often to crack me up. I'm so cracked up right now. I think I might be turning into actual crack. Grade 8 leap forward. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. I know we got a lot backed up here. Great show as always. Go Bernie. Unfortunately, I think this will be a rough ride for him. His populism will come under vicious attack from the establishment left and right. I predict his campaign will be dealt with in the same way the Occupy was. If it shows any sign of traction, I just hope he can set an agenda. Yeah, I agree. Waiting for Zini. Andy Godwin Kindler. Fleek looking good. Salmon Rushdie's a hack. Take over Texas? Isn't Texas already the territory of the United States? I don't know. I don't know what the rationale is. Calling from a 410 area code. Who's this?
And this is Ian from Baltimore.
Ian from Baltimore. Ian sent me a great email about Baltimore, and sadly, I forgot to pull it, frankly. But what's happening?
It's all good. You pretty much covered everything that came up at one point or another, and I think your coverage has been great, by the way. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
But one thing I've noticed a lot of people aren't talking about right now is the curfew that they're implementing in the city. You know, it affects a city that's got 650,000 people in it. And Baltimore has a huge homeless population. And the cops are basically clearing homeless people off the streets. Their shelters are full. People are going into hospitals and asking for rooms. It's kind of insane when you think about, like, what level of resources we are expending on all these police, and then we're using them to basically intimidate homeless people when there's absolutely nothing going on in any of the areas the homeless people are, like, congregating around.
And it does also feel to me, too, that there's sort of like a there's a lot of discretion involved in this.
Oh, absolutely. So I live in a white area. Well, okay, I live in a black neighborhood. But Baltimore's kind of funny in that the segregation is really it's all over the place. It's not like there's like a black half of town and a white half of town. It's kind of a patchwork. So I live in a black area that is surrounded by white areas. And as a result, there's almost no police in our area at all. There's less police than normal on the streets right now. Meanwhile, you know, the black parts of town, the poor parts of town are flooded with cops. There's, you know, military vehicles, soldiers. It's bizarre.
Wow. Interesting. And so is there a sense that, I mean, is anybody talking in Baltimore about sort of broader issues than just the police issues? I mean, is anybody starting to say like, hey, maybe it's really time that we address this sort of ongoing problems that we have in the city? Or is it just focused around the police?
Well, it really depends on who's doing the talking. I think the mayor and her team have been really focused on the police issue because they know that they're kind of doing everything they can to get this prosecution going,
right?
Which they think will resolve a lot of the tension. But the problem is that a return back to normal, as you sort of implied there, means a return back to crushing poverty and economic disparity. And I don't think there's any will right now to do anything about it. And I think it's going to just simmer until the next thing that happens is going to cause a crisis.
Interesting. Ian, thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Keep us updated. Let's go back to the IMs. SBG, I don't know if you have seen this or if Cliff mentioned it, but Kornacki is reporting that Wildstein signed his plea agreement on January 21st. Uh-oh, Governor. Greg Abbott needs to get John Hindraker on the case. Now, what that means, if he signed his plea agreement on the 21st and the indictments are coming down now, we've had now 4 months of him working with and negotiating, and he's negotiating. That means he's giving as well as getting. Have they made the announcement yet? Has that press conference happened?
Happened a while ago. I IM'd you, the lawyer, his lawyer. Let me see if I can find the quote again. I am it to you. Wildstein's attorney said that, quote, evidence exists.
But that he's said that for a while.
Oh, really? So that's not new?
No. I'm curious as to who got indicted today. Let's go to the phones. Calling from, we got a lot of people on the phones, folks. I don't know if I'm going to get to everybody. You're calling from Skype. Who's this?
Hey, Sam, it's Scott. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Scott?
Great. Listen, I listened to your call earlier with the guy that was following or listening to Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And I just have to mention, after living under 8 years of Bush, and Abu Ghraib and Gitmo and having torture be legitimized, basically, in the media. I don't trust the military. Okay, I don't trust it, whether it's under Bush or whether it's under Obama. Now, I don't trust it thinking that they're going to take over our government anytime soon. But I certainly am not as comfortable as you are in trusting them. If they're doing exercises in the United States, I know they do a certain amount. I come from a military family. I'm not too familiar with Jade Helm, so I can't really speak on that. But I'm just not as comfortable with the military as you seem to be.
Well, I don't know that I'm comfortable with the military, but that doesn't. There's a difference between being uncomfortable with the military and not trusting some of what the military does. But, I mean, and saying that they are being ordered by the government to take over parts of Texas and Utah. I mean, you see the wide gulf there, right? I mean, if you want to tell me that there is the potential of, let's say, a military coup in this country, which is not, it seems to me, what Alex Jones is afraid of at all. I got to see a president who is doing something other than what the military wants, frankly. before I even start to contemplate that. I mean, it certainly, look, you know, there was a time, FDR's time, there was an attempt to be for a coup. But that's not what he's concerned with. And it's not a question of trusting the military or not trusting the military. It is the context in which that distrust manifests itself. And that's my point, is that, you know, this generic notion of like, there's a problem afoot here. Yeah. Okay. I agree. There's a problem afoot here, but the solution is much different if you see the problem as a one world Bilderberger group that has been going on for years via the Illuminati or whatever it is, versus a shared agenda by corporatists who want to get rich.
Well, Sam, I've looked at some of these, Alex Jones and some of these other conspirator podcast hosts or whatever you call
them.
And most of them have one thing in common. You just look at who their sponsors are and you know who they work for. A lot of them are selling precious metals, which is something that you sell by scaring people. You've got the survivalist companies selling packaged meals, right? So their intent is to scare the bejesus out of you.
Yeah.
And you can look at their sponsors and see it. And you can do the same thing in the mass media. You look who sponsors. You look who's behind MSNBC and Fox News.
Yep.
And you can tell exactly where they're going.
Exactly. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
right. It's
not
complicated, but as far as the military.
And you could tell with this show, too. We're trying to get people hyped up on caffeine with justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code, get 10% off. All right, I appreciate the phone call. All right. So it turns out that Bill Baroni and Bridget Ann Kelly. Bridget Ann Kelly was the chief of staff or assistant chief of staff to Chris Christie. Bill Baroni was the other guy who was at the Port Authority, who worked under Wildstein, who had like an unnamed position. You just sort of added there. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen going forward. Jay-Z. The Law Gazette reported that Reverend Billy performed a corporate exorcism of a law firm that's currently acting for an outsourcing company of an investor state dispute against the Republic of Egypt for raising the minimum wage. Kind of thing you can expect more of under TTP and TTIP. Disclaimer, of course, the UN Charter of the Rights of Lawyers prohibits the equation of clients and clients' causes with their representatives, but you're hardly going to prick the conscience of an outsourcing company, are you? Carl Sagan. Did you see Bobby Kennedy on Real Time with Bill Maher? I didn't. He was talking about vaccines, and although I know you guys don't see eye to eye on it, I thought he at least presented an interesting case as to the corruption of the CDC's process for determining which vaccines get added to the schedule. It makes perfect sense that American troops would try to take over Texas. Don't countries regularly have hostile retakeover of areas within their borders? Rosa Parks Slope. Oh, my God, I'm dying. Andy Kindler on the Fleek and Ron Fournier bits are effing hilarious. Fish sticks. I'm dying. Totally off topic. On the Grubhub mobile app, the section where it asks you to enter the type of food you're looking for, it's examples, and it actually says pizza, Bob's Burgers. My son thinks that's hilarious. He loves Hugo on that show. Oh, well, thank you. Matthew Gold. Blitzer became prominent during the first Gulf War in Kuwait. Previously had the first interview of Jonathan Pollard. Interesting. Dick Schlongworth. Michael, would it be too much to ask for Mos Def's Mathematics to be played for the break music one time? Why did one straw break the camel's back? Here's the secret. The million other straws underneath it.
That could happen.
Blithering idiot. Going out on a limb here. I think Kindler brought it.
Lindsay, you say Mos Def, by the way?
Who did?
You.
Mos Def.
Okay, okay.
No, Sam said it right.
Lindsay Graham Cracker. Sorry to burst Andy's bubble. But he didn't make Time's 100 Most Influential People. Bam, that, Andy. Is there a laugh track of two hyenas on this show? Bam. Daryl, I've always been offended by Adam Sandler, so why is this surprising? A Square, just what we needed today, the notorious big Obama bot. Oh. I got a lot here. Sometimes an image makes one uncomfortable and you're not sure why. I took issue with the woman in Baltimore hitting her black son for personal and political reasons. But here's a long piece you may want to check out and discuss with Professor Gloud next time. To quote, praising the mother distracts from a hard truth. Doesn't matter how black youth behave, they risk being killed just because they're not viewed as innocent. And I add, because of their black bodies. Well, you know, that was sort of my point and why I think, like, she was misinterpreted at first, because she said she didn't want her kid to be killed. Shank Steele. The telling thing about Alex Jones are the ads he runs in the Crappy Hawks, indeed. Clyde the Libertarian. Hey, you liberal nanny staters need to stop harassing Matt over soda drinking. If he wants to go down a Bill Globe every day, that's his freedom as established by the Constitution. Just like I, as a horse, have the right to walk on concrete all day if I want. RuPaul, 2016. Sam's travel agent. By not supporting the Iraq War, France got the hate treatment from the American right. A decade later, it took the killing of far-left cartoonists by the religious far-right movement for the stupid left to do the same. Reagan's corpse. Sam, are you guys still doing donate your account thing? I keep signing up, but I haven't seen anything new posted on my accounts for months.
No, I do it.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Oh, did you sign up for the daily one? You have to sign up for the gold or whatever that plan is. You might have signed up for like a weekly or a monthly.
Flea Party. You guys haven't been posting the show on YouTube this week. When will that be back?
Yes, we have.
You Sam
have
to Cedar.
Yes, it's YouTube.com/Sam Cedar. Yes. That's where it is now.
That's where we live stream. B, do these morons in Texas understand that their state is already part of the union? The feds don't need to take it over. It's already part of their nation. Yeah. Nice try, B. Good luck next time, buddy. I'm not laying down my machine gun. I'm standing right at the border of Texas. Don't mess with me. Wiseline Port. Headline, Behind the Jade Helm to premiere at Texas Film Festival. Philly Hacker, can we stop calling Republicans insane? I feel like it at least can be said that insane people are helpful and interesting from time to time. Republicans are just idiots that gleefully enjoy ruining the lives of others. That's something to be said there. Barmstead, InfoWars, breaking news. Obamacare makes RFID chip implants mandatory by March 23rd, 2013. Yes, in fact, that's probably how you're listening to this show right now. Via the chip that was implanted in you 2 years ago. Pat Peel, do they really believe the U.S. military are the country's greatest heroes at the same time planning to be the country's greatest monsters? Doe Link, new ACLU mobile justice app just released for California records and reports police encounters. Just posted, mom who slapped son in Baltimore now being investigated by CPS, but okay for cops to kill. Kevin 11721, while listening to Alex Jones fan, the feed cut out. Just checking, what are the names of your children? Are you the real Sam Cedar, who won the 1938 World Series? Carter's foreign policy. Whenever Alex Jones is mentioned, it's all remember that Alex Jones once called Ted Cruz a president with Sarah Palin VP, an extremely intelligent presidential dream team. Carioca Obama. This show has been awesome. Cliff was great. Andy was on fleek. And then we got Alex Jones fan call in. To really make the show a winner, you need a crazy liberation call in. Hey, Walter Block, you listening? Reagan in the money. Did you know Oregon is host to the biggest bioterrorism attack in history? And you think Alex is one with the conspiracy theories. Come on. K9 Cats. Great shows, guys, from Texas, Dan. I'm so embarrassed by the right-winger state power stack. But what the legislator wants to do, allow taxpayers to designate which school taxes will go to. Ugh. Literacy. I believe both Baroni and Bridget Kelly were also indicted. Born Blue. FYI, Just Coffee's offering free shipping in perpetuity. I got an email from them today, and here on out, all shipping is always free. Wow. That's awesome. The Genie, Sammy, you are correct about the obfuscation, professional Alex Jones. Back in the 90s, when I worked higher ups on the volcano, driving home in the wee hours, there was nothing on the radio but Art Bell. Often he would have on Alex Jones. One of their favorite topics was Bohemian Grove. An example of what you're talking about, he would describe how one night he saw the wealthy attendees performing a ceremony called the Cremation of care to Moloch. But with him, it was all about the giant owl, the child-shaped effigy, and Satanism. Please insert happy birthday for me. Show far here. All right, here we go. Happy birthday. Melancholy. Some folks have complained the app says you're offline when you're live. It doesn't necessarily mean the majority report is offline. I've noticed the app will do whatever... Do that whenever you lose your internet connection. Oh. B. Haub, I'm wondering how Bernie will not be elbowed out of any meaningful media exposure, as with the case with Kucinich. Well, there was a lot more people running when Kucinich ran. Bernie is a senator. Those are my two answers. He's already established his place in the national media in many respects. All right, we got time for one more call. I'm sorry about the other callers. There's about five of you who will not get on today. I apologize. You're calling from a 954 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Sammy. It's Michael in Miami. How are
Michael
you?
Michael in Miami. How's it going?
Good. Yeah, birthday so far for yours truly on Sunday as well, but God, so many topics to cover. All right, I grew up in Baltimore. It's my hometown. And all I can tell you is that one of the reasons is it hasn't had the history of racial animus that's been more publicized is because the power structure in town has gradually become more and more dominated by African Americans. I don't know if that caller who called you earlier has lived there for a long time or still connected, but for a long, long period of time, it was considered an ethnically viable town with a lot of neighborhoods, Polish, Italian, Irish, Jewish, all kinds of representations. It's only been within the last 15 years that now you have the mayor, the chairman of the city council, and the police chief are all African American. And I think a lot of the anger had been muted by virtue of the fact that they thought the power structure would give them some kind of relief. It had not.
Right.
And unfortunately, what happened this past week was just, you know, it was the tinder on the fuse box. It just was finally lit with this, whatever happened. And I guess I didn't hear your opening. Did they end up indicting people or not? I didn't hear that.
They're bringing charges against the six cops.
Yeah, I figured as much. I figured as much. So that might be some of the understanding as to what's going on, as to why it hasn't happened earlier. We don't have the history, or they didn't have the history, because I haven't lived there in 15 years, but I'm still close to a lot of people, and my family still lives up there. They just didn't have the history of that kind of ignorance from the power structure for a long period of time, and that helped out. That helped mute a lot of the problems.
Hmm.
Real briefly, the real reason I called, though, was I just, in this thing, talk about get your blood boiling. What is anybody doing giving Judith Miller the time of day on anything?
Right.
And I realize she's got a contract and she's got a book publishing deal and HarperCollins, wherever else is involved. But why is anyone giving this woman the time of day?
Right.
Can you tell me what a value that they have talking to this person, except to explain that she involved herself in essentially treasonous activities?
I mean, I think it...
Even your buddy Hayes,
right,
who I
understand.
Love Chris. I think he tries hard. Buddy, he was so off the line. He didn't ask her one question about Joseph, about the ambassador and his wife and Valerie Plame.
Right.
He didn't ask anything about Hans Blix and the inspectors on the ground. And she kept coming at him with this BS about, well, that's what the intelligence community told him. And I kept like screaming up and down. You had inspectors on the ground. He never touched her on that. Even John Stewart, who I thought did a really good job on the other night, he didn't even bring that up for the most part. I mean, it was so obvious that she was co-opted by the power structure up there, with freaking Scooter Libby sending her emails about how they're going to watch the Aspens turn at the proper season.
Right.
I mean, this is a story about access and somebody covering their rather large ass at this point. Why is anyone talking to this woman?
Well, I mean, I think there's a sense. I'm totally speculating.
Is there really another side of the story we need to hear?
No. But I think for people like Hayes and John Stewart, they want to be in a position of grilling her, and you know, I think.
Well, he missed. With all due respect, he missed. And I like Chris.
I'll tell you something. I sat in the green room, or actually, like by the I was in the wings of the studio on that night because I can't even remember now what it was I was going on about afterwards, and I was so angry that when she walked by, I had to turn to just face the wall because I didn't know how I would react if she made eye contact with me or, you know, like you're in a hallway and you're the next guest. And usually what happens is like, hey, how you doing? Good luck. Have fun. Whatever it is. And I couldn't even bring myself to get to engage.
You know, that's because you're not part of that, of the people who are dependent upon that. And I understand that there's a reality. I was in that business for 12 years, too. Access is what it's all about, and they need access. But please tell me the journalistic benefit of having that woman go on there and propagate more bullshit and lies. And pardon me for swearing on the air. Please explain to me what the value that any of us is at that point. It's like you talking to that Alex Jones guy. Are you serious? You're going to sit there and waste oxygen talking to some guy about a person who believes that space invaders are going to come and get us? Please.
I mean,
these people believe that they're under attack by,
listen,
you know,
I can
every
tell
ethnic
you
the, origin group.
I can tell you the value
of... They're going to sit there and be survivalists, and we're giving them time on the air. I mean, I love you to death, but sometimes... you know, you're too patient, bro.
Well, but I can explain to you the value of having that conversation with the Alex Jones fan, which is I think it's really healthy if there are less Alex Jones fans. I think it's just healthy.
But you're not going to.
And I'm
that's
not
like
con-
saying it's that's like saying it's better that fewer people try to live underwater. Okay, I don't get it. But
I think it's better if fewer people do try and live underwater.
Well, I would agree, but I just anyway.
All right,
listen,
I share your sentiments about
the
Judith Mill.
Go Go campaign. If I could contribute, I'd like to be able to do that. Is that just on the website?
No, it's gone. It's over.
But
you can always donate through our. You can always donate through our. You can always donate through our PayPal account.
Have a wonderful weekend, guys. You always haven't been able to call. You've been real busy lately, but in fact, I got a deposition I got to get to.
All right, get to.
You guys are the best. I love you, and keep up the good work.
All right, thanks for calling, buddy.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. I share his anger about Judith Miller. All right, the final I Am of the week, folks. Slow clap for the listeners with awesome screen names. Matt, Mike on Monday. I'll see you on Tuesday. Great week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Matt and the BK, your reaction to Judith Miller reminds me of some fantasies I have involved being introduced to Henry Kissinger at an event. Actually, Barry Crimmins, who we got to have on someday, has a great story about that. All right. Bye-bye. So long.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost but dry between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I've got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lines got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Pilot light shining bright.